Welcome to The Journey Eights. I'm Reverend Judy Hosner, and I invite you to sit back and spend a few moments with us as we share some music and dialogue with you.
Ring them bells, ye heathen, from the city that dreams. Ring them bells from the sanctuaries, across the valleys and streams. For they're deep and they're wide, and the world's on its side. And time is running backwards, and so is the
okay, that was a recording from a couple of years ago by Joan Baez and Mary Black called Ring Them Bells. And it's become one of my favorites, I think. Ryan, you picked it, right?
No, you picked it.
Oh, I picked it.
But I do love that song.
Yes.
There are so many different versions of it. There are other versions I prefer. But that song, no matter who sings it, is always really wonderful and always really moving. Beautiful.
I like it. Okay, before we get started, this is my, I don't know, fourth or fifth session inside a hospital. Now, today was a very eventful day because right before my meeting with Ryan, I had this pleasure of having people from radiology come up and snatch me and say, you got an MRI and some ultrasounds. I mean, it's like 2 hours before the show starts. And I said, oh, no, there must be a mistake. No, we don't make mistakes in our scheduling. No. So here we are, going down the aisle. And I'm thinking to myself, I'll get back in time. I'll click my heels. And Toto will get back in time. So I want to thank the team downstairs in radiology, Nikki, TJ, Saad, P, and I think her name was Mabursa. Please excuse me if I messed up your name. My mind was elsewhere, but you did a great job at getting me back within a half an hour. 1/2 hours. So if I'm a little frazzled, that's it. Now, Brian and I agreed that, because there are thunderstorms outside here, and B, because my voice is still not recovered, that this is the Ryan Duncan Show with the guest, Judy Hosner. So take it, Mr. Duncan.
So it's a wonderful thing to be able to take charge. So we're going to finish up our conversation from 2 weeks ago. We were talking about the 5 core values of life's journey, and we were using it as a model to kind of look at what's important to progressive Christian congregations, because I think it's pretty well written and it's a good basic model. We still have 2 more of the 5 core values to discuss tonight, and we may have some time at the end for me to talk about kind of post-Christian things that move beyond those core values but also incorporate them. So we'll see how far we get, and so we'll go ahead and start. But before we start, because Judy has been in the hospital so much the last couple weeks, I have really encouraged all of us in the Journey 8 family to pray if that's what you're comfortable doing. So feel free, I would encourage you to pray for Judy and her family and pray for our program as we figure out what we're going to do next. Most of you know that I'm a seminary student, and I'm mostly finished now, and the summer has now begun, so I can spend more time with Judy figuring out the things that can make us better. So I would encourage you to reach out to me. You can send me an email at ryanduncan@thejourney8.com. We're very interested in getting feedback from you as far as how we're doing, what things you'd like us to cover, what music you like and you don't like, because we certainly have our own perspective, but we also want to share things that are important for you who are listening. So I would encourage you all to contact us through email, or you can phone in once we get started in the program itself. The phone number here is 888-627-6008. So to get back to the discussion from last week, or 2 weeks ago, the fourth point, or the fourth core value of Life's Journey is, we believe God continues to speak and is active in our world. We take the Bible seriously while acknowledging it can't always be taken literally. We seek the divine through nature and the Spirit's presence in persons and in gathered community. So we believe God continues to speak and is active in our world, which means prayer is a good thing and God answers prayer. As most people in the United Church of Christ believe, we believe that God is still speaking. God still speaks through the Bible, through different interpretations of the Bible, but God also speaks through our friends and our family, through our pastors, through culture and what's going on in current events, because God is active in the world. So God is speaking through the world. And so for me, that's really important because it puts the Bible in a certain perspective. Most Christians will say the Bible is at the absolute top and that we get our scripture and that is where God speaks to us. And all the other things that I've talked about is not something that God uses to interact with people and to share his or her wisdom. And at Life's Journey, and Judy and I agree with this, God continues to speak through the world and to the world. And so it isn't just how God is speaking to us, but ways for us to also speak to God as well. Because God is in all things. God is in the air and in the flowers and in the trees, as well as being in the church building and in the minister and in our church family. God is working through and in and through so much of everything that we do. It's why the separation between the secular and the spiritual doesn't really exist. We like to think that on Sunday in church, that's our sacred spiritual time and everything else is secular and therefore somehow separate and different. And the more that I learn and the more that I live, the more I recognize that God is in the world always and that everything in it is part of God. I don't want to say part of God's plan because I do think we have agency in it. But it's all part of God's plan. And so when we want the world to be a better place, we have our own agency in it. It's up to us and our friends and our community to be the change that we want to see in the world. And that's a quote from Gandhi, I do believe. And so how we interact with the world and with the people in it and with our environment and with nature is really very important. Because that's a way that God speaks to us. And therefore, we can find God in all of those things. We can find God in pop culture. We can find God in our children. We can find God in the beach and in our pets. God's in everything. And so everything becomes very special to me. The other point that they talk about is we can take the Bible seriously while acknowledging it can't always be taken literally. The more that I've studied in seminary, the more I realize that the Bible is a really powerful book, but it is not scientifically accurate, nor was it meant to be. It was meant to be a book of stories, very much the way we think of mythology today as being very metaphorical and very poetic. It's very different, say, than a history textbook that speaks factually. The Bible was not meant to be read that way, early Christians and Jews did not read their holy scriptures that way. Reading science into holy scripture is a modern phenomenon that has happened only in modern times within, the last 100, 150 years. So the Bible wasn't ever made to be taken literally as scientifically factual and as historically accurate. That doesn't mean that none of the Bible is factually true or accurate. But what I think it means for me is that the Bible doesn't need to be read that way, and it shouldn't be read that way. We should read it as wisdom knowledge, as sacred texts that can be interpreted in multiple different ways, just like the parables could be understood in different ways, depending on where we are in our life, where we are in our spiritual journey, things like that. So when we read the Bible today, we might interpret it, understand it one way. If we read it five years from now, it'll be read differently and we'll pick up and emphasize different things. And I think that is part of the process, and we're meant to do that. There isn't one way to read the Bible, and there wasn't ever one way to read the Bible. If you look at scripture and you look at history, there were many, 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 many different books in early Christian understanding. There are lots of different gospels. We have four that we use now, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, but that wasn't established as canon at least for a good 100 years until after those they were written. And so we had a whole bunch of different scattered communities. And so when you see things like the Gospel of Thomas or the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, which are considered apocryphal, which means they're not part of the canon, but we do recognize that they exist, it's because they had a different message that the people in charge at the time didn't necessarily value. And so there's a lot of different literature out there, and we as individuals today don't get to decide which ones are valuable and which ones aren't. Somebody else has done that for us. And I think that that's a mistake, because they had a particular agenda at that time, which can be different from us.
Do you think it's time to rewrite the Bible?
Yes, I think that would be helpful. But then the question would be, who would get to decide what's the Bible and what isn't? And I think it's
me.
There are different books out. I've seen a book called The New Testament, and I forget who the author is off the top of my head, but he takes the Christian Bible and he adds apocryphal writings to it that he thinks kind of mirror the same message, and he pairs them together. And for him, that is, and I think the author's name is Hal Taussig, T-A-U-S-I-G, and he's a scholar, and so he's written the New Testament. So some people could accept that and use that. And that's a combination of biblical readings and writings and other apocryphal things that really have a powerful message. And I've read it, and they work really well together, and it illuminates parts of the Bible in ways that hadn't been illuminated for me before. So I think that it's a valuable read. I would say today a lot of people would recognize that the Bible needs to be rewritten. And I think that's important now that we have so many different scientific discoveries, because a lot of people want to just replace the Bible with science. And I think that that's a mistake, because they're both doing different things. And I don't think that one type of knowledge should be seen as more important than any other. So the Bible as literature, as poetry, as wisdom knowledge should be upheld. But I think that we can incorporate a whole bunch of other literature to go along with it. And I think science should do its thing. And it can be somewhat separate. They overlap, of course, but science isn't meant to teach us spiritual lessons. And it may not, depending on how we see it. So I let them be in their different spheres of influence and let them do their different things.
So you're not saying merging the Bible with all these new ideas. You're saying almost make them like a library of scripture reading.
Right. I mean, the apocryphal readings that are hard to find, but if you get a good Catholic Bible, they'll include it, is really helpful. A lot of the other things, the Gnostic Gospels and all of that, is really helpful. I don't think they have much to do with the original church fathers. I think they're a whole different strain of thought. But I think they're valuable, and I think putting them together can help us strengthen our own faith and illuminate things in ways that we hadn't thought of before.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. I mean, it'd take years and years. It's not something one person or one team of people would be able to accomplish in a lifetime, but laying down a framework by which to do it would be really a neat quest, I guess you could say.
It would be. I mean, there are so many different things that people are doing with the Bible these days. You've got the Red Letter Bible, where you've got people that are just taking the words of Jesus and getting rid of everything else. You've got a lot more secular humanist stuff happening. There's the Women's Bible. There's Bibles that try to have more inclusive language. They're all different kinds of different interpretations of the Bible. And even for me in seminary, it's hard to keep them all straight because they're all trying to speak in different language to reach different people, as well as saying something completely different. So the translations are really important, and who we're trying to speak to is really important as well. I don't think we could ever write just one Bible that will speak to everybody. Some people like the language of the Message better than they do the King James Bible, which is really flowery and Old English kind of language. Other people like the NRSV, which is what the UCC uses. And apparently that's what academics use. So when people are trying to study the Bible in an unbiased way, they tend to use the NRSV because they think that the translations are more accurate. So there are a whole bunch of different translations already that do different things. And that's always going to be true, I think, because as humans, we all need different things.
Well, and it would be neat to see that taken another level or another direction. That is that all these, let's just call it the library of scripture, can be redivided by religion or denomination. So, you know, you have the Catholics would pick out, you know, book number 1 and book number 13 or what have you. And I think it would be a useful tool, similar, but not similar, to what the Mormons have done.
Now, that would be really interesting to me. I think what would be interesting is to take the New Testament and put it in a different order, because so many of, let's say, so we'll start with the Gospels, a lot of them have the same stories in it. And before I went to seminary, I couldn't figure out why so many of the Gospels had the same stories, but they were told in different ways, and they left out parts and they added other things. And so I think it would be interesting, really, for us to explore at least the Gospels more fully. Mm-hmm. When I joined seminary and started taking classes on the New Testament, it became really clear that each author was speaking to a different audience, and that's why the stories were different. And nobody ever gets told that unless they're in seminary. They just think they're all canon, and therefore they're all true, whatever true means to you, either factually true or spiritually true or whatever. And so we don't question it. We don't go any further. And we just read them at face value because we believe that other people have done the research for us and that that is truth. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in the canon. And yeah. That is necessarily true. If you look at John, it's very different than all the other three. And I'm not entirely sure why.
The book of John, although it's a... it's a scripture. It just like doesn't fit. Where do you put the book of John where it really fits? You know, it's not a gospel, although it can be, because he saw and was baptized, excuse me, by Jesus. But its stories don't even start until Jesus is a grown man. Talks nothing about his birth or what have you, and it's like this book is so different.
Right, and that's because in John, God started in the beginning with Jesus, and they were both there in the beginning, and they were the Word, and the Word was made flesh. And so in that story of Jesus, it's very, very high Christology where God is already divine, and that's not necessarily true in the other gospels. And so with that basic premise, when you're starting from that point, it changes everything. And so a lot of the stories are told in a different way, and there are some that are left out because they're telling a different theological message.
Yeah. And so, you know, you put it in, you know, what have you. And so for people coming into the church, or people coming back to the church, some of them were totally turned off because of the way the Bible approached, shall we say, religion with them, and did the same thing you told earlier. Why is the story written three different times in three different places? You know, with the progressive church at some point, and I know it will happen, there will be a movement to put things in order, almost like in sequential order.
Right, like this, like Mark was written in 40 AD, so that should be first. And Matthew was written 50 AD, we should put that second. I think that that's kind of a mistake. Because all of those, all the Gospels were written by different people to different audiences, and they were meant to be read alone. They weren't meant to be read together. So I find it interesting that all four of them are together and they all make up the gospel. I think that Jewish understanding of it would be different in that they would wrestle with it more. They have a tradition with their rabbis of wrestling with texts. It's called the Midrash. And so it's all about interpretation and understanding. And so we don't just look at the gospel and say, okay, this is the information put in front of me. I was accepted at face value. They were meant to be wrestled with, to be looked at, examined, played with, messed around with. And I think that's kind of the value of having the four gospels together, because it encourages us to interpret for ourselves and to play with it. And I think that's really one of the major deficiencies of Christianity at this time, is that we're not encouraged to play with the scripture. We're just expected to regurgitate it without really letting it transform us. We're just to say, okay, the pastor says this. I trust and respect the pastor. Therefore, I'm going to take this at face value, and this is what I'm going to do with it.
And that's where we lose, once again, for the second time, someone trying to come back, because the 21st century is just not framed that way, you know?
Right.
If we want to reach those people whom you and I have said we want to reach, then we've got to be able to offer a means by which they can be in touch with the scriptures without being scolded for skipping. In other words, I'm going to read the Book of John, and then I'll go over to, you know, and, you know, that was totally taboo, you know, in our time. But I encourage it because of what you just said. It's you're opening up and you're learning in your way. And, you know, that's totally what I want to see people doing. And mm-hmm. I want to see them coming back to their pastor, their group leader, and saying, no, I just don't get this. And not being scolded for it.
Right. I mean, usually nowadays for me, when I'm in a Bible study or any kind of study group, even if it's not scripture, we have the pastor, whoever's in charge, tells us what the book is about and what it says and what it means. And then we just accept it and say, okay, this is what it means for me in my life. But there's no real wrestling with it. And church really needs to be a place where people can wrestle with things, not just with scripture, but with what's going on with their lives. And we're not set up to do that. One of the things I was hoping we could talk about this evening was that the church is so closed off from allowing people to wrestle with things. And what that does is it puts the clergy in this elevated status. And I think that's really problematic. So many people say, okay, the pastor is anointed by God. He's been touched by God in some way. And he has all this education that I don't have. So when he stands up and speaks from the pulpit, that means something different than if I were to speak. And so there's this elevation happening that I don't think was ever intended. I don't think Jesus ever did that. And I don't think that he wanted his disciples to do it either. We're all people and we're all the same in the eyes of God. And we're all blessed, maybe not equally and not in the same ways, but we're all blessed. And so I think that that's really important. And one of the things that you see emerging churches trying to break down is the hierarchy that's within the church. It's something that I care very deeply about, which is interesting since I'm in seminary and on track to be ordained. But sometimes you have to go through the system so that you can break it down. And yeah. I really, really strongly believe that the role of the pastor needs to change in our church.
Well, I see. Right. And I hope that people see the dais or whatever you want to call it as not a platform of hierarchy, but a platform so people can see you. That's all. You know, it's just three steps up so the people in the back can see you. If that were just the case in all churches, think of the freedom right there. All of a sudden, the people that sit on the dais, the choir and the pastor and the organ player and all that, aren't the same as you and I. They're not lifted. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And people can touch them and talk to them, you know, and feel like, you know, hey, so, you know, if you do that with one thing and approach the Bible or start to approach the Bible, like you said, with a sense of wrestling, you know, a sense of, I read this. I read the Book of John, and I don't get it. So I'm going to read it again, and again, and again, till I get it, and not feel shamed because of it.
And sometimes you may get it, and you may not like it, and that's completely fine. Right. The Gospels were written in a particular time for a particular group of people. If you don't get it, that isn't necessarily a failing on your part. It just simply means that that document wasn't written to you, and therefore you're going to interpret it differently than how it was originally meant. I don't think we're ever going to be able to scientifically find out what exactly the writers of Scripture were trying to say. And I know a lot of people like to go back to, but it was God that wrote the scripture. That's not really true. And I hate to, and I don't mean to say it like that, but if you've ever been to school and you've actually studied it, you can look at it as a piece of literature and you can see stylistically where things were added and where things were taken away. And it may have been written by God in some way, metaphorically, but it was written over 100 years by a whole bunch of different human hands. And then it, the final product was accepted by people who didn't even write it, who came generations later, who accepted it based on political ramifications of things that were going on at the time. So I don't think that we're ever really going to get to the pure Bible. I think if you want to get back to God and God communicating with you in a really pure way, the scripture for me is not the way to do it. I'm a bit of a mystic, so I have other ways, different forms of prayer that I might use to get closer to God and understand God more directly than I would through scripture. And I know I'm probably the minority in that, but that's where I am in my life, and my life experiences is what got me to this point. And I like to think that I can be just as good a Christian if I use experience and my direct understanding of God over scripture. I get a lot of pushback on that, especially here at school, because we're supposed to be scholars and we're supposed to therefore elevate the word. And I don't do that as much, especially if it conflicts. And as a gay person, I'm so used to the Bible being used to attack me that I gave up on it a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And granted, there's a lot of good in the Bible and a lot of really beautiful things that you can get out of it. But you have to really, for me, myself, I'll speak for myself, I have to really weed through a lot of scripture to get to the good stuff. It's like Deuteronomy and the whole Hebrew Bible is difficult for me to get through. They're very much written about as stories. So there's a lot of stuff in the Hebrew Bible that can be taken literally from a historic perspective. And I think there's a lot of stuff in there that did happen, but I think it was meant to be read as a story. It wasn't meant to be read as a history book. And there's a lot of stuff that I know from history that's not in the book, that probably should be. And we can understand the Hebrew Bible better when we understand the history in the cultural context that it's put in. So I think that the Bible is a beautiful thing, but you need to have a whole bunch of other pieces of knowledge to go with it for it to really make sense.
Well, it's like Old Testament, New Testament, you look at history of the world. There is the ancient culture and the medieval times and the this time and the that time. So why would it be so unusual that the Bible would be like that? You know? And so the first thing that comes to mind for me is that I just lost two leads on my thing. Two wires just came popping out.
Oh, dear.
They won't be able to find me now. The first thing that really strikes me is that, like you, I look at the Bible in a certain way, and I believe it to be a history book. It is a history book with some guidance for us as far as general things or paths that we should take to be good people. But, you know, if you read it like a history book, like you would read any history book, then you would know it's a collection of stories. It's a collection of someone's ideas, you know. And it reflects whatever was going on at that point in time in history.
It does. And when I read the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament, we scholars prefer to call it the Hebrew Bible, But the Hebrew Bible really is a bunch of historical stories, but it has an overarching narrative because it talks about several different covenants that different individuals made with God and that God made with his chosen people. So it was really a story of hope. So here you have the Jewish nation at the time, very small and insignificant, often conquered by foreign powers. And back then, when they were conquered by foreign powers, that means they were raped, pillaged, and tortured, and their houses were burned to the ground, and they were enslaved. And so while all this was going on over hundreds and hundreds of years, they knew that God was on their side and that they were God's chosen people, and that therefore, in the end, everything would be fine. And so that really, for me, is the power of the Old Testament, even though so many stories really depict God in a very negative light. But the overarching theme was that if you do the right thing, God is with you. And that was very important for them at the time, and it was a very hopeful message. The language and the messages we need today are quite different.
Yeah.
And so the New Testament is quite different. I would say 2,000 years, we're probably due for another one. But we have to be able to recognize the Messiah when he comes for that to really happen, don't we?
We pull it to the gas station. We hand over our Bible and we say, "Tune it up, Sam." Yeah, that's it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
So, yeah, I think that we have to be really careful about understanding the location of the writings we're talking about. You and I know that because we've studied in ways that others haven't. And I wish that that was more acceptable in churches. There are so many progressive clergy who don't really preach the Bible the way they were taught. And there are a lot of moderate and more conservative theologians as well who were taught in a more liberal setting. And then they go home and they teach a different God than the one they learned about in their studies. And that's often because, and I've seen it, is when a minister tries to preach about the Jesus that they know from their understanding of Scripture from an academic perspective, it challenges the way people heard about God when they were younger, and they don't like to be challenged. So that really is the crux of the problem with Christianity, is that so many people had an understanding of the Scripture and of God and of Jesus that was told to them when they were 6 years old. And it has not changed since, because they haven't allowed there to be room for that change to happen. And that, I think, really puts many Christians in this kind of spiritual immaturity, because they got one message and then that was the final message. And they didn't recognize that the story of Jesus evolves and that we get age-appropriate information. And so as adults, we should allow for information to come to us that is in conflict with the information we got as children. And I've known people that have been really damaged by that. So I've known several people in my family who were very active in their church when they were younger, and then by around 18, they left the church, which is really common, and then they came back into it in their 40s or 50s. And the God they talked about was very different, and the way people read Scripture was very different, and that challenged their perceptions and their whole worldview and their whole understanding of God and everything else. And they weren't equipped to allow themselves to be changed in that way. And yeah. So they had to fight and push back. And so I feel really strongly that a lot of Christians have this immature understanding of the Bible, and we need to allow for room for that. And it goes back to what we've been talking about all night, is about there being room for people to question and to push back and to grow. There isn't one understanding of God, and there isn't one correct understanding, because God is everything. God isn't one narrow truth.
Speaking of room to grow and diversity, did you find the song and send it?
I did. We've been talking, I completely forgot. But yes, now would be a good time for the other song.
Mr. Engineer, can you play Cabbage?
There'll be cabbage in heaven. There'll be cabbage in heaven. There'll be cabbage in heaven at the salad bar. There'll be bacon in heaven. There'll be bacon in heaven. There'll be bacon and cabbage in heaven at the salad bar. The table will be open.
Now, is that diversity or what? It doesn't matter whether you're Jewish or Hindu or whatever. There's something at that salad bar for you. No, not just bacon.
But the bacon for me is what's important. So that was Cabbage in Heaven, written by my friends Mindy Dillard and Eric McEwen. We played it for you 2 weeks ago during our last episode, and a lot of people asked for it again. So that is why we're playing it for you. I love that song because it's playful and it's fun. And often when we're in our spiritual quest and we're going to church, we're actively looking for truth and for knowledge, and we get very serious about it sometimes, and sometimes we forget to laugh. And so that's why that song's important to me.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people say, you've been so sick lately, how can you still keep your quirky sense of humor? And it's like anything else. You can't be serious all the time. You can't, you know, dwell on, you know, things that, I mean, it's good to think about things, but then file them in the right place and go on with life. So that's what I love about that song. It's just, and I think our producer likes the song too. He's giving me a hard time. We have a couple minutes left, so we are not going to hit number five. However, we will have some way of posting it on our website. I hope that now that summer is here, maybe I'll get better and stay out of the hospital for more than 5 days. We can continue to work on the website.
I would really love for us to be able to figure out how to be able to post questions so that people can then, we can have a dialogue through postings and things. But everybody can talk about it.
I think that's basically what I envisioned for the website. It's not going to be a, you know, come buy my t-shirts kind of thing. I want it to be more of an interchange of questions and stuff, you know, from our show. You know, hey, you talked about blah, 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 you know. And to some extent, I have to learn to do that on my homepage at BBS because I hear there's a way to do that, but I haven't taught myself yet after all these years.
Well, we'll figure it out. Because that was much better than people sending us an email, because then it's just a one-on-one conversation. Right, I think that we as a community have a lot of wisdom and a lot of knowledge to share. And so I would prefer for us to be interacting as a community instead of as a bunch of individuals.
And me too, oh compadre.
And that's part of the breaking down of the leadership structure. That we as the leaders of the channel or of the community, and maybe the only two people with an MDiv degree or a Master's of Divinity, that doesn't necessarily put us in a special position. It just gives us different information. And so I really think we're all on an equal footing. And so being able to have conversations in that kind of format and that structure where we're all sharing information is really better, because it is a way for us to live into our theology.
I look at religion, belief structure, I don't even like to call it religion, as education. And, you know, I've learned more from people who've never stepped foot inside of a school than I have from, you know, PhD doctors. Isn't that right, Brian?
That is right. As somebody who is around PhD students a lot, they speak in a different language, and they speak it, there's this academic language, and they speak it very well, and they spend all this time learning the language. So they learn the lingo, but then they can't actually speak and share their knowledge in a more accessible way, which is why there are so many academics who don't like, say, Dominic Crossan, for example. Because he's written so many popular books and has sold so many copies, he's seen as not being academic, and therefore we don't use him in seminary. But he was able to reach hundreds of thousands of people when an academic book might sell 20 copies. And they have the same degree, but they speak a different language because they're trying to reach different people. And so I would take a PhD person who writes popular books any day, because they're writing for the masses, and the message is the same, but they're using different language. And well, I think that should be applauded instead of penalized.
I think it's like being at a dinner party, and you've got three different doctors upon doctor upon doctor, 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 doctor. And the sad thing is they sit in the corner because they don't know how to communicate to those of us who are the average person. They've entrenched themselves in the language of languages of languages so much that when you go up to them and say hi, their mind, you know, their face, everything goes blank. You know, they just, oh, hello. And then you say, well, what's been happening? And they go off on this tangent. And you say, very nice, I'll see you around.
Well, now, I have not had that experience. But there is this kind of snobbery involved. I have been told so many times while I've been at seminary that it's important that I learn this academic language, because I need it, because I have to have it. And I actually don't, because if I were to talk about eschatology and theology and all this other stuff, nobody would know what I was talking about, and they would think that I was a snob. And I can't speak like that to parishioners. I can't do that. So I think that theological education is really behind the times in that respect, because ILF is really cutting edge, and if they still do that, then that means pretty much everybody else is as well.
Yeah, and you know, we can't reach those that we want to reach, the ones, as we always say, that, you know, have this feeling of being the underdog, or I'm not going back to church for blah blah blah, I never needed church, and look at me. If we want to reach those people, we have to talk in their language. We have to say, you know, hey, it's not the these and the thous and the therefores. It's the me and you and us.
Right. And we need to drop the religious jargon, because that just says to people, I'm smarter than you. Look at all the stuff I know that you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's show-offy. And I don't really go for that.
Me neither. And I say, at the end of this show, we have a song. We do have a song.
Yes, we do.
And we'll close it on out. So Go ahead, Mr. Champion of Music.
Ring them bells, ye heathen, from the city that dreams. Ring them bells from the sanctuaries, across the valleys and streams. For they're deep and they're wide, and the world's on its side. And time is running backwards, and so is the
Thank you so much for spending time with us this evening. Please come back again. And remember, be kind in all you do, and the kindness will come back to you. Grace and peace, Reverend Judy Hosner.